out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Tuesday, the 20th of February, 2018. It's our first live podcast of the week. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. And of course, we are welcoming back Nat Daylor, who wasn't here last week. Nat, how are you doing today?
I am doing fantastic. I'm just enjoying a nice cup of coffee from my corner store I normally buy my coffee from. It's quite delicious, it's good, it's healthy for me, and yes, it's a wonderful day, and thank you very much for having me on your podcast program on the internet.
You're welcome. It's been a lovely day here as well. It just seems to be the start of spring. Is it springtime yet over there in Denmark?
We don't really see anything like that. It's rain and snow. That's all we get here.
I think we've had enough of our rain and sleet and snow. We've had one of the coldest winters we've had for quite a while here. So you certainly wouldn't have felt out of place in Britain over these last few months, I think. Anyway, I know you had something you particularly wanted to get off your chest today about standards, movement standards and optics and a lack of doctrine, which I think are all pertinent points. And I think they dovetail in with some of the points that I'd like to make. So perhaps you'd like to let us know what's been on your mind over these last couple of weeks, Nat.
Well, I have been observing in silence many, many debates on, you know, the movement. The movementarian. I've heard a lot of talk about the movement as a whole. And there have been lots of talk about optics. You know, they've been talking about the Spurk question. They've been talking about all sorts of things, about what direction particularly they want the movement. And then when I say the movement, I think they're referring to the alt-right. So they talk greatly about the optics. You know, the optics for the mere purpose of mass appeal. However, there seems to be a big problem with the alt-right. Now, I am aware that after the Trump election, the alt-right kind of split into two. You could say the Big Ten collapsed on itself. You got the alt-light and you got the alt-right. You know, essentially, same concept, but of course, the alt-right being with slightly more racial leanings. Now, this sounds all good and dandy, but The problem is that now they are getting a bit more organized. They're trying to push forward with their idea. They're standing in a bit of a pickle because there's so much talk about the optics of how the movement acts, how the movement portrays itself. And they seem to be going in a lot of different directions because they seem apparently, and I read some threads on people who went to some alt-right meetups, and they said that, you know, the people who were there were either fat or ugly or autistic or, you know, all these things, like appears to be losers, fuck-ups. And they seem to have been having a lot of talk about how to correct that. However, where the problem arises here is that since they're going for mass appeal, that means that they're likewise going for a broad appeal. And when you have that, it's kind of hard to make a doctrine. It's kind of hard to make a program. And it's hard to implement a standard. So when they aim for trying to define a certain amount of optics you should have, it's simply put an impossibility. Now, that is what it is. They try, again, to get mass appeal, and through the mass appeal, they try and bring reform through parliamentarian means or democratic means or whatever. It's all very vague. It's very wishy-washy. They have like a very abstract idea of white survival But other than that, they don't really have any clue about what they actually want. Because it's, you can ask any old writer, they will all have different ideas. And they don't really have any unifying ideas on what they want besides pro-white politics. On the other hand, you have the National Socialists. So you have the alt-right for the optics, and then you have the National Socialist perspective, which of course is based around the very idea of standard, right? Not just mass appeal, but generally speaking, a standard for how you wish to see the new man. National Socialism being a byproduct of culture will take many different forms and will always try and adjust to wherever it might be in this world. But with that being said, they have an inherent doctrine to their very idea. And a doctrine that assumably will lead them to either revolution or what you could call victory through any means that might be deemed necessary. Or, you know, even if they go in democratically, that would be fine. However, the very idea is the titanistic nature of National Socialism simply dictates rebirth of the new nation. They require rebirth away from the old, creating the new out of love for the people. Now, these things, you know, the National Socialists will always be able to at least just look at the Nordic Resistance Movement or even the Golden Dawn, how they're able to display people with a certain optic, you know, strong men, uniformly clad, looking representable, not looking like fat losers. So that is the inherent difference. This is why the National Socialists will always be able to present better people. However, there's a no man's land between these two spectrums of the racialist movement. And I have decided to deem these people siegelings, because they are kind of like an in-between thing. They want National Socialism, but they don't have a program. They don't have any standard, don't have a doctrine. They require a revolution, but they don't really have any means to get to that. As such, they don't have any standards. And because they don't have any standards, they kind of attract a very juvenile part of the right wing, very young men, what you could call the, let's just call them the part of the youth that was left outside. We were kind of dropped in the side road. Didn't really have any choice. They are, normally speaking, boys without fathers, relatively young in their early 20s. And they seem to be very prone towards subversion. But let me try and explain the character of these people. They have simply put projection into their worldview. They have adopted misanthropy rather than philanthropy. They are not adhering to ideals, as a matter of fact. They seem to just think with the hammer, but not really having any ideas of how to reconstruct that which they seem to wish to destroy. So, yeah, it's they're very open to subversion, these people and these hyper-radicals, these young whippersnappers, I guess you could call them. And it appears that certain doctrines of what you could call be great Nietzscheism, I think they call it Satanism nowadays, seem to have taken like root in this. It's not even titanistic. It's just juvenile, this juvenile revolutionary idea. And you said you earlier, we talked to you, you said you had some information about this, these people who are apparently subverting these siegelings.
Well, it's just something that I've seen before. You know, people try to subvert groups, and it's very easy to do if you don't have any standards. I think you bring up a really good point there, that we've got members of the alt-right that want to have a mass appeal. They want to appeal to everybody. Yeah, if you appeal to everybody, that's the sort of people that you're going to get is the majority. You're not going to get the excellence. You're not going to get the elite. You're not going to get the people that are really striving to improve themselves. You're going to get the bottom of the barrel. And when you look at groups like, Nordic Resistance Movement, who everybody wants to be like, I mean, they've got the best optics. They've got the most disciplined, most approachable people that look healthy, look fit. But as you say, they are national socialists. They have standards. They have discipline. They have doctrine that they stick to. And if you don't have that, then you, on the one hand, you leave the group open to all these people that really do not have any understanding of why they wish to save their race. I mean, you can see this from the way that people try to put purity down and make out as if purity is a bad thing. Purity spiraling is a bad thing. So on the one hand, you have that. On the other hand, you have people that think it's very funny to be edgy and all these edgy memes. But from the outside looking in, when you're looking at these edgy memes, the people are just looking like a bunch of saneness, a bunch of freaks, a bunch of weirdos. And they think it's all very funny. It leaves it open for the real freaks and the real weirdos and the real pedophiles and the Satanists to get in there. And they're just as good at creating memes, and they'll end up with getting people to go along with like crazy things and just thinking that it's funny. And yet you will have people that are taking that seriously. And also from the outside looking in, it looks serious. It really does look serious. You know, I mean, I don't know whether I should bring up any examples. I don't want to actually name people. But this is what goes on, and you have an intersection between satanic types, occult types. You have an intersection between them with the intelligence services and also with pedophiles, and they do evil and wickedness for the sake of doing evil and wickedness. And they can move into a website, and if they can, that's what they'll do. They'll sow discord, and they'll turn people that originally had good intentions. They will turn those intentions around, and they'll tell them that you don't need to have morals. You don't need to have ideals. You don't need to have a doctrine. And before you know it, you know, a group that started off with all the positive intentions and it originally started with discipline, and they'll all be at each other's throats, and they'll be untrustworthy, and they'll be no different to the Bolsheviks. And the one thing that prevents that is having a strict doctrine and having morality and insisting that people hold themselves to a high standard. That's the only thing that will keep it away, I think, Nat.
Well, the thing is, just to put a nod on something, democracy appeals to the lowest common denominator. That was written by Nils Knudsen, an old member of the DNSB here in Denmark. I mean, there's a lot of truth to that. And you see that with the mass appeal of the alt-right, of course, that they, just like these standardless seedling groups, seem to attract the lowest common denominator and the most dysfunctional at that. But I think these satanic elements that is being mentioned, and they have actually infiltrated quite a lot. I think what we are bringing into question is, of course, the Order of the Nine Angles, you know, a group that follows such embarrassing teenage literature like the Temple of Blood and the Iron Gates, you know, people you would normally define as left-hand Spurgs, you know, which is pretty funny if you think about it, because according to National Socialist, and if you are to go Evolian into this and have an Evolian perspective on this, you would define the left-hand path as, you know, lunar traditional. It's materialistic. It's feminine. It's essentially a philosophy that adheres to the lowest denominator of man. You know, according to these scum, these, you know, moral invalids, they think that the first impulse that comes to the mind of man is healthy and natural. That's the beast in man. And they think that should be adhered to. That is the thing. They think that should be adhered to. So that feeling of fear you get when you're in a firefight, that you should adhere to that. You should actually just put down your rifle and run away. That's the noble thing to do according to the left-hand path. It's the glorification of cowardice. And they will try and say, oh, you're a coward for not adhering to the beast. I say contrary. You are a dog because you adhere to the dog in yourself, and you should not be referred to as a man. But to the whole edgy meme thing, it's really, and this is something the dear listener, one of actually the best audience in the world, if I dare say, on Radio Aryan. If you ever meet a person in any group, wherever you may be, and he starts, you know, saying, you know, he's coming with weird sentiments in a ironic way. Irony is just a way for a freak, an outsider, a dysfunctional, to lessen the blow of his personal flaws. When he's trying to make a funny ha-ha joke out of serious character flaws or deep spiritual dysfunction, it's always an indicator of that he's trying to subvert you and essentially trick you into accepting his moral decadence.
Well, you're very right there. That's the thing to watch out for. And, you know, I really have to bring up some examples of this, I think. You know, I mean, you've got somebody that calls himself Rape. Yeah. And that, I mean, that to me is just like a real obvious red flag there. Somebody calling themselves Rape. Why aren't people, you know, why don't people suddenly think, well, how does this look? Hang on a minute. You know, what was this guy's intentions? Why would you call yourself something like that? You know, it's people like that set the poison in, and people will accept that. So next, it will be something a little bit more. Next, it will be some pictures of animal torture or animal mutilation. And these people that do things like this is, you know, all this fluffy paganism, that's just window dressing for the real stuff, which is twisted and perverted and is trying to go one step further, one further step in evil than the last. You know, you hear these sick things that pedophiles do. It's not a sexual preference. It's about stealing people's innocence. It's about being as wicked and as evil as they can possibly be. And sex comes into that because that's the easiest tool that they can use to do that. And that's the real magic. This is why these people do it. And anything, you know, white magic is just a cover for the black magic. And this pagan stuff, these pagan ideals are just a cover for that. I mean, I've had experience of seeing these pedophiles take over websites and turn everybody into people like themselves. And they use all these esoteric symbols. You know, I used to think, well, these guys, they've got it wrong. But then it suddenly came to me, well, no, they're the ones that have got it right. You know, the people that use, that call on these pagan gods, use these esoteric symbols, and they go into these rituals and they abuse children. And we see it in the establishment as well. And the imagery that they use and the references to Egyptian gods and all this sort of stuff. And that's mm-hmm. the real deal. And we should be on the opposite side of that. We should be the forces against chaos. We are the forces of order. We're the forces of civilization. We are we strive to improve ourselves and to imprint order on things, not the forces of chaos. The forces of chaos is what we are against. It's like a whole spectrum of stuff that we should be against, and we should not allow any of it anywhere near our movement and our organizations. Because it really is a slippery slope that leads to that. It's all part of a spectrum that what we are against, and we can't allow any of it in. You know, it's impurity. We need to be mm-hmm. we need to be dead against it, and we need to insist that everyone that we work with is also against it.
But let's actually have a look at the character frame of this. You know, these what I'm tempted to say teenage cheer. Satanic cults with weird leanings towards the Turner Diaries. Now, don't get me wrong, I absolutely love the Turner Diaries. It's a fantastic book. However, these people, these siechlings, seem to take it to another, let's just call it perversion, warped view of everything. And why? And now, if you look at the Order of the Nine Angles, and the very idea that the Order of the Nine Angles has, it is the deconstruction of Western civilization due to the fact that Western civilization itself is made up on the idea of Christian morals, that Western civilization is a glorification to God, and they wish to see that destroyed. The original founder, and from what I've read on the Order of the Nine Angles, they seem to be infiltrating a lot of different types of groups, from anarchists to Stalinists, National Bolsheviks, and now even what you would call seedling groups. All these groups that are kind of abstract, don't really have any clear premise, but as a total goal, have the intention of destroying Western civilization. So the philosophy that they base everything on, you know, in this case, the Temple of Blood and the Iron Gates, you know, if you read up on any of this shit, it's like, if any of the audience have remember when they went back to high school, they would remember probably that there was like the sinister 13-year-old girl in your school, or like the 14-year-old girl who would sit and draw angry things. And at some point, you would probably have a school presentation where she would talk about Satanism, and she would try and look as sinister as possible as she talked about the 10 laws of Satanism. And you would just kind of cringe at your toes and think, this is really, really embarrassing. And that is a running theme in Satanism, because Satanism is just the antithesis to truth. It's based on falsehoods. It's like a defiant little kid stuffing his face with candy, better know it, against the very clear instructions of his parents. It's just a hissy fit. This is nothing more but a hissy fit. Alexander Slavros of Iron March, at some point in 2015, him and I had a conversation, and he referred to, you know, the Order of the Nine Angles as pretty fucking gay. And I think there's a lot of truth to that, because it is juvenile, it's infantile, and these boys, quite frankly, these seedling boys, they don't know exactly what they're doing. They just read the first book they could ever get a hold of, because they're raised up in an environment where everything has no meaning, so therefore, it might as well all burn. Then you read this and take it as, oh, this is bloody good, I'll follow that, and it's embarrassing. This is projection. They have brought clear projection on the behalf of their personal failures into the worldview. And this is the result, where you have to read something that might as well have been written by a manio-depressive 17-year-old girl writing a fanfic. Is embarrassing. Truly embarrassing.
It's linked up with transsexualism, all sorts of degeneracy. The Temple of Blood, or whatever you're calling it. I mean, it used to be called different things before. There was a guy, a musician called Genesis P. Urich, who used to run this band called Psychic TV. He's a transsexual now. He chopped his bits off. And he was into all of that. He was into getting people sending him bodily fluids to various parts of the world where he would do these rituals with them. You know, this is a sort of thing that I would think would be as far removed from nationalism as it could possibly get. And then you find, well, no, it isn't. Somehow it's managed to work its way in. I think part of the reason why it works its way in is because people misunderstand what the meaning of Satan is. They're against the Jews, and they don't think to actually research where the Jews come from or the history of it or Christianity. And they end up thinking, oh, Christianity is Jewish, so therefore, if I want to be against the Jews, I must be supportive of Satan. And Satan is, like you say, it's the lie. You know, Christ said he was the truth. He's the personification of truth. So the opposite of Christ is the lie. Satan means the adversary. It's the attacker. It's everything that we are against is satanic. The inversion of the natural order is satanic. And the personification of everything that we are against is Satan. So to think that if you're going to go supporting Satan, you're going to be a Satanist, that means you're against the Jews. It's not, because the main people that follow the main people that are against the natural order are the Jews. You know, that's who they serve is Satan. They are the perfect example of the Satanist, a race of Satanists, are the Jews. I mean, what's the point in joining them? You're not fighting against them. And you brought up another thing earlier, Nat, about a misanthropy. That's exactly what it is. It's the hatred of humanity. It's the hatred of all the things that we're trying to preserve. Only the white race has humanity. We're the only people that have these traits of humanity. Mercy, justice, charity, a sense of law. The other races do not have that. We are the humane beings, and we should be striving to protect humanity, not trying to destroy it, which is traitors to our own people, following an ideology like that.
It's what the audience must keep in mind is that by you calling out ideological and philosophical and even borderline cultic bullshit like this. By calling this out, you're not dividing and conquering. You're not purity spiraling. You're clearly just showcasing a healthy expectation of standards and good behavior. And when you see bad behavior, bad ideas, you have a duty to call it out. You have an obligation to call out the shit and disassociating from it immediately. So, with that being said, being a national socialist, being a nationalist, is essentially a fanatic. It's fanaticism. Most people who are good in this world are fanatic about something. You know, George Lincoln Rockwell said that it would always be good if a doctor was fanatic about being a doctor, or if a carpenter was fanatic about being a carpenter, etc., etc. By you being fanatic to your standards, you're doing the 100% correct thing. This, yeah, it's this Satanism. It's really adhering to the lowest common denominator imaginable. It's adhering to the weakness in your soul. How can you put it? It's B grade Sargonite ideas. This is Sargon of a cartier liberalism, essentially. This is what it is. It's Sargonite.
We should be rising above this, and as you say, we should be pointing it out when we see it. When we see things that don't adhere to standards, we need to point them out. You can't just go along with it and just say, well, we'll just let that slide. You know, we have to hold people to these high standards. And you can look back at nationalism over the last 30 or 40 years, especially if you listen to Harold Covington, and he'll point out all the mistakes that were made. And most of them were down to people having flawed characters and other people just going along with it and saying, well, we'll go along with that flawed character because they're popular. And a lot of the time, you know, it's the people with these flawed characters that have these egos, that want to be leaders, that want to be in the spotlight all the time. So they naturally gravitate to these important positions. And it's the same with homosexuals in the movement. All these things we've got to stand against. And I know some people say, oh, well, Christianity, I don't want to be associated with that. But if people did hold people to Christian values, then there would be no way that any of these people could ever get a foot in the movement, because they would be shown up, because they would be incapable to hold themselves to these values. You know, purity, again, it's this knocking of purity really, really gets to me, because purity is an ideal that we should hold to. And the opposite of that is impure and satanic and chaos. You know, it really is a split down the line of what we should be for and what we should be against. And anyone who adheres to what we should be against shouldn't be able to get anywhere near us.
Precisely. And again, the experience of the movement in the past, and people should really read up on what you would call the history movement as a whole and learn from the experiences. And I know that the alt-right, they just kind of throw it all under the rug and call it nationalism 1.0, and they don't really want to learn anything from it because they're new and hip and cool, and they have frogs and they have cool podcasts and they have blood sports on YouTube, and they have their subscribers and all this stuff, and they think that, yeah, we're beyond that now, we're not going to go out and hand out flyers. But they're not really, they have this certain amount of arrogance to them that makes them incapable of learning from, well, let's just call it, past experiences of the racial struggle we're in. And as a result of that, now we're standing in a situation where we have fat, ugly losers showing up to meetups and holding torches and making a fool out of things. And the harsh reality we are in is that if you allow a clown to represent your movement, you're going to end up being treated like a clown, and nobody is going to take you seriously, and you're going to look like a fool.
Well, people might dismissively call it older nationalism 1.0, but because they haven't paid attention to what went on in that, you've now got goat dancers 2.0 which I never thought I would have seen. But that's what's going on. I mean, we've had all this before. We had all this in the 70s and the 80s, and it's just replaying itself out again now in the alt-right because people aren't paying attention. And that's what it was. It was goat dancers. That was the word for it, and that's what we're seeing today, Nat. Repeat of goat dancing. Anyway, that brings us to the end of the podcast. It's good to hear from you once again, Nat. Thanks for coming on. I'll be back tomorrow with Billy Roper. So thank you very much for listening. God bless and hail victory.